Good morning, all, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. We are one. Is that better? No?
Just speak up.
Just speak. Okay.
Yes.
We are one of 20-some ULTs around the world, and we all base our meetings on the on spread broadcasting the ancient teachings of Theosophy that were put down in writing in the mid-1800s. The main focus for our meetings is based on the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists, which is on the back of our little handout that lists our meetings and times. And basically what it says is that the aim of our meetings, of all our interactions with each other, is based on that idea of universal brotherhood, as it says, an exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. And this is the basis of union for all of the meetings, for all of the serious students that come, not only here during the meetings, but we need to take it out onto the street, the families, people that we just meet. And it regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. So anyone is welcome here. And anyone can be called a theosophist as long as universal brotherhood is an important aspect of their lives. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So the lodge here in Philadelphia has two meetings a week in order to fulfill the goal of universal brotherhood. On Wednesdays, we have a library that's open from 5:15 until 7:15. It is Thank you. It is a reference library, and there's always someone available to assist you in any specific personal research you want to do. We also have a reference for that night's class that's available as well. The meeting runs from 7:30 until 8:30. On Sundays as now, the doors open at 10:30. The meeting runs from 11 until 12. The Wednesday class, we're studying the Key to Theosophy by H.P. Blavatsky. And on Sundays, we have an overall topic for the month. For February, we have been looking at developing moral qualities that reform human nature. Today's class is gratitude and respect. Next month, the overall topic is mental progress, and the class's topic is developing intellect and intuition. The classes are all open to all students and visitors. We are financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. Activities depend similarly on voluntary offerings in time and work. All are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. And we do have a book table that's out in the foyer, and we just charge costs for printing and shipping. We make no profit off of us, off of any of the information that's out there. So we will start our class today. Again, it's on gratitude and respect. And how it works is that we will have a short talk, one on gratitude, one on respect, and then we will, as all of our meetings, we will have plenty of time for questions and discussions?
Well, I guess we should start out with a thank you. Thank you all for being here. However, it's an odd thing about theosophy. If none of you were here, we would still have the meeting, because it is a study of principles. And a cycle is a cycle is a cycle. And you don't break the cycle. You honor the cycle. So thank you for being here. But you don't have to be here for the cycle to be alive and well and active. You have to be here in order to take in the ideas. Which, as was mentioned, a great way to do that is to buy the books for yourself. And you can thank the Lodge for that opportunity. Not everyone can get the books at these prices. The other thing is you could go online, and in great gratitude to the students who have done the scanning and the effort, all of the original writings are online. So you don't have to buy any books. But many of us are grateful to have them physically in hand so we can write all over them and then return to that later. This subject of gratitude really seems so simple, doesn't it? I mean, it's one of the most common things to all of us. We might not be especially kind or nice or imaginative, but we are always grateful. We are always saying thank you to someone for either going out of their way or giving us some service. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And it seems like the most natural thing in the world. But what we don't realize, it is a very spiritual thing. It is said, instead of desiring that which you do not have, say thanks for what you do have, is an occult axiom. Well, it also works the other way. Often we will complain about the things we wanted that we didn't get, but we never give gratitude for the things that we didn't want that we didn't get, like a tax audit, things like that. We don't use gratitude fully enough. It is always there. We should be using it. If we hold a sense of gratitude within ourselves for everything, for the misery, which gives us an opportunity to learn and understand something, for the good, which gives us a chance to multiply our energy and our use of our right principles, if we would develop a habit of always being in a state of, I am very thankful for this. It's Mr. Judge's, everything that comes to us is exactly what we desired. But instead of doing it that way, you can say, I'm thankful for everything that is coming to me since I ordered it. I don't remember how or when, but it's a universe of law. I ordered it, or I wouldn't be receiving it. Thank you very much. Although we do recall the young lady who had read Karma Never Gives You More Than You Can Handle, and her response was, I wish karma didn't think so much of me. But we can be grateful for that too, because if something comes, as horrible as it is, it's because you are at that moment quite capable of handling it. So it's a thank you to karma. Thank you. I will do my best. According to theosophy, gratitude should not be expressed exclusively through words. And then we're told that the very best gratitude is helping others. That's how you say thank you to life. I don't know how many of you have noticed it, but lately the world is paying a lot of attention to gratitude. And they're called Master of Applied Positive Psychology, MAP. And they have been mapping out how gratitude can change your life. There is a book called Thanks, How the New Science of Gratitude, the new science, yes, can make you happier. And it lists the benefits and how they are nearly endless. People who regularly practice gratitude by taking time to notice and reflect upon the things they're thankful for experience more positive emotions, feel more alive, sleep better, express more compassion and kindness, and even have stronger immune systems. Now, you're told ways to increase this capacity. Start a gratitude journal. Every day, write down something you're grateful for. Even if it's only, I'm grateful I have this journal to write in. You do it every day, and it will affect you. And write a gratitude letter, if you can, to someone who had an impact on your life and you never told them thank you. Derek Carpenter researched what makes people great in labs at Harvard, Yale, and the University of Pennsylvania. And this is his Change Your Life, and here's the facts of how. Write down what you're grateful for. Scientists performed an experiment in which they asked one group to write down the things they were grateful for on a weekly basis, while the other group recorded hassles or neutral life events. The folks who kept gratitude journal exercised more regularly, reported fewer physical symptoms, felt better about their lives as a whole, and were generally more optimistic about the coming week. Do this. Be gratitude-ish. It's good for you. Scientists studied that a one-time act of thoughtful gratitude produced an immediate 10% increase in happiness and a 35% reduction in depressive symptoms. If it isn't, of course, reinforced, after 3 to 6 months, you lose the results. Now, that's all fascinating and interesting, isn't it? But the theosophical approach to gratitude is really the exact opposite. And it's we're going to the key to theosophy, which we're studying on Wednesdays. These are the words of HPV. The theosophical ideas of charity mean personal exertion for others, personal mercy and kindness, personal interest in the welfare of those who suffer, personal sympathy, forethought, and assistance in their trouble or needs. We theosophists do not believe in giving money through other people's hands or organizations. We believe in giving to the money a thousandfold greater power and effectiveness by our personal contact and sympathy with those who need it. We believe in relieving the starvation of the soul as much, if not more, than the emptiness of the stomach. And here comes the lesson, folks. For gratitude does more good to the man who feels it than to him for whom it is felt. Every time you are grateful, you are doing more for yourself than even to the person or thing you're grateful for. It is awakening the soul, the heart and mind of a spiritual being. So be grateful. Be grateful for everything. No matter how it looks to you, it is of importance to you. And have respect for each other.
So, we want to just start out on a little bit of a light note in regards to respect. We found some interesting quotes, but Will Rogers We think most of you know he was a comedian. He goes, "So live that you wouldn't be ashamed to sell the family parrot to the town gossip." And we, knowing how well parrots can mimic, we thought that was really cute. Mm-hmm. On a more solemn note, respect. There's just the definition so that we can all start on the same page. As a noun, it is a feeling of deep admiration for someone or something elicited by their abilities, qualities, or achievements. And as a verb, to admire someone or something deeply as a result of their abilities, qualities, or achievements. So the more mundane aspect of respect, as the definitions say, is what somebody can do, what they're able to do, what they're like, and what they have done. Theosophy, on the other hand, as with gratitude, as everything is dual, it can be looked at as being another spiritual quality that somebody has. The definition focuses on action, not really thought, what somebody can do. Whereas with theosophy, we're looking more on the thought. True respect is based not on the ideas we hold regarding another's personality as abilities, qualities, and achievements, but on their individuality, their true nature. We would probably be looking more on personality when we're looking at the definition, what most people think of as respect. Personality being that the person's characteristics in that particular lifetime. Whereas with their individuality, we're looking at their higher natures, their spiritual aspects. And theosophy would look at respect when we're thinking of universal brotherhood, as we stated regarding the Declaration. Universal brotherhood, it binds everybody together because we are each and every one of us part of that spiritual essence, that deific principle, that we are all one, that what affects one will affect all. So we need to respect that which is common in all of us, that we are spiritual beings, that we are thinkers, that we all are from the same source. And we, as the Bhagavad Gita, we kind of found an analogy between the two, or similarities between the two. In the Bhagavad Gita, we look at the idea of doing your duty because it is there to be done, that we're not looking for something in return. Well, with respect, it's the same thing. We shouldn't be looking at just what somebody is doing, what they're saying, what achievements they've done, because it's all on an outward aspect. We should look inward, as it is said, look inward, thou art Buddha, because that is the part of us that needs to be respected. That we realize duty is not to the self, but to others' higher interests, as was said with gratitude, helping somebody else, because it needs to be done, because we are all one, that our higher nature binds us together. And we found this interesting quote, "Do not be ever thinking of yourself and forgetting that there are others, For you have no karma of your own, but the karma of each one is the karma of all. So this, and we think this was HPB's master stated this, so that we are all, the karma of all of us, that we are here because of what we have done in a past life has brought us all together. Whether it's a deep love for somebody has brought us back to them, or if it's issues that we all have to work out together, that these need to be, you know, it's binding us all as one. Now, just a couple interesting tidbits from yoga aphorisms. Forbearance consists in not killing, veracity, not stealing, continence, and not coveting. And the next one follows up on that. These, without respect to rank, place, time, or compact, are the universal great duties. So by not looking at somebody's place in life, whether they're a politician or whether they're your teacher or whatever, just because of what they are, what they do, demands a type of respect, but the true spiritual respect that is totally devoid of any importance outwardly, that is the respect that we need to offer each other. And this is from Mr. Judge's How Should We Treat Each Other? The untheosophical view is based on separation. And by respecting somebody for specific things is separating them from others. The theosophical one upon unity, absolute, and actual. So again, we're looking at this idea of unity in order to respect others. And we found this quote, which was interesting as well. This is the final test of a gentleman: his respect for those who can be of no possible value to him. So again, by acting like this, we are looking at the spiritual aspect of the person. Like coming across a homeless person on the street. Really, I mean, the test of a gentleman, what can he offer us? But in regards to the whole idea of gratitude, we do get something by helping another, which would be helping a homeless person. But the respect can be, it doesn't have to be for you. What can I get out of it? It's because that person is bonded. We are all bonded together because of our higher nature, our spirituality. And we did want to read just lastly, this is from Light on the Path. I have said a little way back that after parting with the sense of individual rights, the disciple must part also with the sense of self-respect and of virtue. That the disciple must part, meaning giving it up, the sense of self-respect and of virtue. This may sound a terrible doctrine, yet all occultists know well that it is not a doctrine but a fact. He who thinks himself holier than another, he who has any pride in his own exemption from vice or folly, he who believes himself wise or in any way superior to his fellow men is incapable of discipleship. A man must become as a little child before he can enter into the kingdom of heaven. So we can take your questions.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
The last statement that was read is very interesting to contemplate just how enormously difficult it really is. But we're wondering at the end, it says, about entering the kingdom of heaven. What is this? What is meant by that? Do we, in the context of that reading?
Well, first of all, you said it seems very daunting, but in reality, if we would give up the sort of nonsense that we carry about ourselves, first, that I'm separate from anyone and anything, that I am a physical being or a material being, once we give that up, we begin to realize the enormity of our connection with all of life. Well, it's Mr. Judge's great question. How can we be humble when we are that? We are the divine essence. And how can we be proud when everything else is that divine essence? So we stand in a very awkward position, and we have to realize it. I have nothing to be proud of. I am that or it. So you start working progressively towards that realization. How can you be proud? You can't be proud. There's nothing that is yours and uniquely yours except the effort you are making as a soul. And everyone else has that right and privilege. But we were ignoring the end part of your question.
Yeah, we're trying to. Okay. A man must become as a little child before he can enter into the kingdom of heaven. And so we're going to put that out to the group. Yes.
Would that be, in a way, like a child is born in a very stricken place on the planet, wars going on, drones flying over, okay, people having a lot of difficulty, okay, even hatred for each other, okay, because of the way things, yet the child being born into that is untouched by that, really. The child is just being the child. The only way it gets a realization of the negativity, if you wanted to use that word, would be because someone told them what it is from their viewpoint.
Or a bomb falls near him.
There's the reality. That's just kind of the reality, because that plays into why things are the way they are. We don't have to have all the answers to understand what things are.
Right.
When I look at things like this and ponder them, I say, it's like saying, I want to be happy, but your overall state is happiness, just like that child was born through. Your state probably lives is happiness, but we were looking for this happiness. Okay. Really, it's about peace.
There was a hand behind you as well. Wait, you?
I lost it.
Oh, okay. We're thinking theosophy does not tell us our goal is to be happy, because we are here for the service of life, and we mistake the idea, I want to be happy, I want to have the things I want, instead of going, I am here to serve. How can I best serve? You remembered.
The thought came back. The quote from the reading about become as a child before you can enter the kingdom of God. If you do a little bit of research on that phrase, the kingdom of God, in almost all of the major world religions, that state is said to be within. So a small child who has no overlay from the outside world, or very little overlay on the outside world, is closer to celebrating the root or the nature, the true nature of the divine.
Yeah, further on in that quote, it's mentioned giving up so much of what we identify as the self, and, you know, small letters, that, you know, I am brilliant, I am, you know, whatever you look at yourself to be. So giving all of that up is like a child newly born, and you're like a blank slate, so that you can start developing, you know, the respect and the gratitude that we need for all of us.
Well, and along that line, it's amazingly simple for a child to grasp the idea that we all are all brothers and sisters. That's not a hard thing for them. It's a very natural. We remember introducing the idea to a 4-year-old, and it was just kind of a click, oh yeah, you know? Which isn't necessarily the same thing, you know, if that idea we think is posed later in life, or, for instance, you know, how much work some of us might do to prove to ourselves that universal brotherhood is a fact in nature, and it's like, well, where, why? Look at all these categorizations of all these different people, they don't speak the same language, how could... That's the issue. But naturally, finally, we can always come to a greater conviction of it. The more perhaps we become a child, which is to say the more work that we do on our inner self, the more we see the inner self of all is everybody the same.
And this gets to a difficult point, though, often, because you have a child who is completely innocent, and you have a child who's completely innocent, ignorant. So there's a balance between the two. The childlike state we're to come to is the child who shows gratitude, respect, an eagerness for all of the learning experiences. Those are childlike things. And trust. We have to relearn to trust the universe and ourselves. But what is the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven? Theosophy would say that is ourselves as a spiritual being knowing who we are and why we're here and acting it to the best of our ability, acting in accord with that.
And that kingdom of heaven might actually mean more to the individual later in life than earlier in life, if later in life he's done the work to detach from all those things that he thought mattered while he's still awake, aware, and conscious in this state. That kingdom of heaven might have been one.
Yes.
And it's so much harder to do that, detach from stuff now. Oh, sorry. And it's so much harder now. We know that we're in the age of materialism, of darkness, and we are just bombarded with stuff all the time. And it's so much that is pulling us from that center, from that kingdom of heaven that is within us, and pulling us away and making us separate from, you know, our fellow man, you know, from that idea of universal brotherhood, from being... having that gratitude towards everyday things, you know, that we have some friends that we say, hi, how are you doing? And it's like, well, I got up this morning, I got up on my own, I fed myself, I was able to dress and wash myself. So it's, you know, noticing these simple things and then being able, as was said, to put forth that gratitude towards others, whether we know them or not.
But there's also the fact that we may be surrounded by stuff, but if it's attractive to us or attracted to us, it's because of our magnetism, not the stuff itself. So if you don't want to be attracted by stuff, you say, oh, okay, I'm going to make a plan here. So many hours a day, I'm going to back off from all of that and I'm going to look at nature, or I'm going to read spiritual books. You find a way to avoid the stuff. It's there, and everybody has to face the same issue, but you don't have to dwell in it. And the same way with, you know, taking gratitude as a way to reduce depression and to make you more enthusiastic about things. Wake up every day and be grateful for at least one thing. It was George Burns, I think, who started cataloging. He would wake up in the morning and he'd go, "Oh, I can open my eyes. I'm very thankful. I can hear myself talk." And he went on and on and on. By the time he got up, he didn't care about any pains or troubles he had. So it's up to us how we deal with stuff. Way in the back again, though.
The theme for the month is a very interesting statement that the pursuit and practice of these various virtues can reform human nature.
Mm-hmm.
And that theme puts this whole process into a whole new light. If we hold with the proposition that there's reincarnation and karma, and we make the effort, however conditioned, to practice these virtues or to acquire these virtues, we're impressing all of matter, every degree of substance we can imagine, and therefore the entirety of what it is to be human can be uplifted or denigrated, mm-hmm. depending on individual effort.
Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know if it's Western. It might just be human nature. But we always have the assumption that if something is free and it's easy, it's not worth doing. As a matter of fact, if we were to have a sign out in front that you could, for $1,000, come in and study the ancient wisdom, this place would be packed to the rafters because people would then assume it must be worth something. But if it's free and available to all, there's a kind of natural rejection. So the object is to take what is free, test it out, study it for yourself, see if it works. March, we're coming into March. Okay, march forward, everybody, with a month of gratitude. Do an experiment the entire month of March. Wake up every day thankful for something else and see how April looks and feels to you. Prove it for yourself. Of course, you can also keep coming here and studying and learning more. You know, what we don't respect often is the fact that we are spiritual beings. We act like we're physical beings, and we live on our emotions. We don't respect our own spiritual nature, and that slows us down, keeps us coming back life after life to face new and kind of greater difficulties, all self-made. Yes?
We experienced a pretty interesting karma that was, we think, was directly associated with gratitude, and it had nothing to do with us personally, and it has to do with what HPB said about the gratitude that the beggar feels when he's personally addressed by someone who shows him respect. That helps him more, or as much, or more
than the money,
than the dollar.
Yeah.
So what was interesting was, what goes around comes around. So this gentleman, who I did not personally know, was on his deathbed, was told me literally verbatim. He says, "I am dying the worst, most miserable death any human being can die." And it's because he didn't have a family. He hadn't talked to his kids in years. He was told 6 weeks earlier, when he thought he was healthy, that he had terminal cancer, nothing's going to happen. And it was going to be days or weeks before he died. But he's laying there conscious, knowing what's going on. And he went on, and I'm standing there listening to him, thinking, gee whiz, so what do you do now? Well, we asked him, you know, can you tell me two things in your life that somebody else was grateful for that you did? And he told me one, and it was years earlier. He said he was in a bar. A woman did something, dropped a glass, something happened, and she was cut really bad on her arm, and the blood was going crazy. It was an artery. And the people in the bar started to freak. But he had been in the army, and he was a medic. And in the midst of that, he just did what he needed. It was one of those Gita things, just do it because you're there, and it's there to be done. You know you're not going to get anything out of it. So he saw it happening, and second nature to him, he dealt with it because he was a trained medic, and off to the hospital she went. She really could have died. It was a mess. And the gratitude that everybody there had for him, you know, well, that was years ago and it was done. But here we are in the future. What's the karma of him just doing that and giving other people a reason to feel gratitude, not even doing it on purpose? Was on his deathbed, there he is, it started him thinking about, wow, at least I did that. And it took him out of Kamaluka and put him into a much better place in the moment. And it was an interesting observation. It was the karma of just doing it for someone else. And he had no idea it was going to come back around on him.
But it was also that you recognized your job at that moment. You were there karmically for him.
Perhaps that was it, but at the same time, really, the Ivy Mai of it was,
right,
like,
was not there.
What the hell am I going to do?
Right.
But you got a spark, and you ask him, and off he goes from.
Yeah, you used your intuition on that one.
Yes?
Some of us can look out the upstairs window, say on a day like this, or any day, and say, great, magnificent, because it's beautiful outside. Would you call that a statement of gratitude?
But what's funny is it's always beautiful outside. Even if it's storming and your house is falling down, it is the beauty of what must be. And if we would only realize it, I have all of these problems and conditions because I created it. I probably didn't mean to. I thought I was going for something else. But my attitude, my motive, my insincerity created the mess I now face. Well, isn't it beautiful that I'm given this opportunity at last to fix it? To make it right. The problem is, as long as we don't recognize it as our problem and as beautiful, we're not going to fix it. We're going to bury it. We're going to hide it. We're going to deny it, which makes it even bigger when it comes back the next time. Think about it. We're just repeating our mistakes over and over and over. And it's time that all of humanity grew up and faced the fact that what they're dealing with is the mess they made.
And your perspective on anything, your frame of mind, will determine if you're going to look at something in a positive way or a negative way. We love Mr. Judge's idea about when we're looking at the trials in life, to not look at them as obstacles, but as opportunities. So it's just like looking out a window and there's 2 feet of snow and you're, oh no, I can't get out. I'm going to have to shovel this, that, and the other. Or you can look at it and think, wow, I have so much I can do today. I can just relax. I can stay in my pajamas. And there's nothing, you know, I really need to do that I can do. So again, it's your perspective on how you're looking at something.
Yes.
Is that kind of like the saying?
A little louder.
Is that kind of like the saying, there's two sides to one coin?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, that's a very, very significant comprehension. There's two sides. It's just one hand. Spirit, matter. It's one and the same thing. It's whichever side you're looking at something. So you see your life and all the things going on in it as matter. But it's all part of spirit. It is the power within us to will and choose that created the matter that we're dealing with. So if we can take that position, the minute something comes to us, we flip the coin. It isn't just, oh, good grief, this is awful, I can't bear it. It's, oh, there's something important I have to learn here about life, about myself, about my choices, about my motives. So it puts you in a completely different position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've known people, we've seen this, where the person is in a position of authority, but very few, if anybody, respects this person. Yet there are those that flatter mm-hmm. the person and can manipulate them that way. And they're really not showing respect. So how do we help the person who's in that position that perhaps no one respects, and also the flatterer? How do we counter that?
Well, first of all, you're assuming that we're here to fix and change each other, aren't we? And Theosophy says, well, that's not true. You are here to work on yourself. And in that working, it may reflect onto others. I mean, we all have people we look up to. How does he or she do that? How wonderful. And we may actually ask them, how do you react like that? What's your background? What's your training? And we learn from it. But we're not here to fix each other. We're here to fix ourselves and love and serve each other. Now, if someone comes and asks you, you know, I have this important position, but nobody treats me with respect. You can then take what you know and question them to try to see where are they so far off the mark. Maybe they're arrogant. Maybe they're bossy. Maybe they're non-understanding of anyone else. And the people who flatter, well, it's very hard to deal with such people because they've learned how to be successful by doing nothing except lying. And so they have a long way to go. But your object is work on yourself. And then it's possible people may come to you and ask for help.
And you figure the karma that the one that is showering the boss with compliments, that's not, he's got, you know, what goes around comes around. Mm-hmm. He'll get his too.
He'll be next boss.
Oh, wait, we had one before you. Just one. Yes.
I'm curious as to this famous song of Michael Jackson, We Are the World, fits mm-hmm. into this broad conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, it's personal, impersonal.
Yeah.
But if we change our mind, if we are the world and we change our mind about the world, philosophically, could we change the world by our...
What else can change the world? Hmm? What is the world?
Well, that's the puzzlement, or the cosmic puzzlement. We are the world, so we can change the world.
Yes, but thoughts. Can it happen overnight? Absolutely not. But it can happen overnight. We change our own world, but that effect on the world is going to take time. You know, people sometimes act as though they are wise just because they've tasted wisdom or they've studied theosophy and they think, well, now I'm wise. I know it all. Well, you have to ask yourself, where was I 10 years ago? Where was I 20 years ago? How did I get where I am right now? And how much wiser am I? I've just touched the outside of things. So, yes, changing your world will change the world, but it takes forever and a day, it seems, because there's so many of us, and our thinking is in opposition in trying to reach some sort of place where we can stand together and disagree and differ and still respect each other and be grateful for the other's opinion and education and knowledge. Until we reach that point, Nothing is going to change.
And it's interesting now, I mean, we're not going to get into specific political ideologies.
Absolutely not.
But we can see where people are respecting how things should be and were that are changing, and that there's so many people coming together now that, you know, even 6, 7, 8 months ago, they weren't, you know, they didn't know each other. But now there's thousands of people coming together, coming behind different and positive ideologies.
Okay, but
we
also know that that doesn't mean they will get what they want. There's the karma of certain situations. What have we, especially here in the West, planted for ourselves? Let's go back a little in history and how we treated those who lived here when we got here. Mm-hmm. And let's look at what we have done internationally in all the years since America was created. What has America karmically earned for itself? And even if we suffer the worst of worst defeats, we still have ourselves as thinkers to stand in a better position later because of the misery of what we have learned. And sometimes that's the only way we learn. So it is wonderful when people come together and work together, but sometimes it can be too late.
Yeah, there's that idea of being checked by karma.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So is there an ever-present, could an ever-present indicator be of how all we can do is influence by how peaceful you are through all of it?
Mm-hmm.
Not some of it, all of it. So there's going to be an effect from all our thinking or speaking or our actions. And if we can receive back, and the indicator is, are you peaceful with what you're experiencing right now enough to be balanced just to take it all in, and from that moment, be balanced, okay, be stable, or make a better position. Or realize, okay, wow, I didn't see this bad position. Okay, I actually was in. I didn't notice it.
But that's the truth for most people.
The indicator is the peacefulness that one experiences moment by moment.
But not everyone can do that. The ones who can, of course, will have an effect on the world around them.
We have to share
and
that
that's
thought,
that's beneficial.
Right, we have to share that thought, okay, through words, and sometimes words, okay?
Yeah, but sometimes if you share a thought with someone who's very angry, depressed, or upset, and you want them to be peaceful, they are going to attack you because they have the right to feel as they feel, and they want you to know that. So
inner peace is inner peace. Okay, if you're not experiencing inner peace, we can have the most well-intentioned. Like I said to someone sometime, I said, well, I want you to know I never would do anything with the intent to harm. And I said, I know this person. I said, I absolutely believe that 100%, knowing you for 20 years. I said, however, when you direct something to me, if in this moment I can show you where it could cause harm in a manner which you never even knew, didn't even think about, would you continue to act on from that same viewpoint that you actually trained and believed was a good thing? I said, there is the test right there. It's moment by moment. We never know when it's going to come.
Well, all of our education and our spiritual training as youngsters is led to be narrow, usually. We have narrow thinking. And until we widen that and realize, well, it was the Pope himself a couple of months ago who said, you know, the Bible and the Quran are the same thing. They really are the same thing. So until we widen our perspective, we will continue to be only at inner peace with ourselves, not with the rest of the world.
I just want to add, instead of we are the world, maybe it's we are our karma.
And the karma of the world. We can't escape it. There are mysterious statements in the philosophy that even if we make individual progress in inner peace and wisdom and gratitude and respect, that there is a point at which we will have to wait for others to catch up with us, that we can't go on in a selfish sense alone. I will have bliss and wisdom and see you later sort of thing. So yes, it's we are our karma. We are karma itself. We are that law.
Yeah, karma affects different areas, and one of them, it's like your karma, your family's karma, and just kind of spreads out. So the entire world is here together because of a collective karma. So, you know, we have to populate the astral with positive, with good thoughts. Thoughts are very are very, very powerful. And, you know, we can affect the change, even if it's just in our local, they say, what is it, think globally, act locally. And it's really very true. Yes?
There's an old saying, there's nothing new under the sun.
King Solomon said.
And those of us who have paid a little attention to ancient history, and then come in here and hear the words periodically.
Hear what word?
Periodically. Mm. The great loss provides help, the means for helping the people grasp the idea that there's nothing new under the sun.
We recently saw a cartoon of Krishna and Christ sitting on a cloud in the sky. And Krishna is saying to Christ, well, one of us has to go back again. They've forgotten it. Will it be you or me? And that's the truth. It is periodical throughout the centuries, back into the night of time. These ideas keep being brought back, but this time, in 1875, was the first time ever it was in black and white, so that I could take it home and own it and know for myself, oh, this is what they said. And this is what they said, but that isn't what they said. This is what they said. So it's a completely different opportunity for humanity. And why? Because the prediction was that if we, as a human race, all of humanity, didn't start to make changes, we were going to sink in a sea of horror, the likes of which has never been seen. That doesn't mean we're done for, but when you climb up out of horror, it takes ages and ages to get civilization and development and education again. So it will cost us a great deal if we don't shape up. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And the idea of shaping up, we think the whole thing rests upon our awareness that we are all spiritual beings, mm-hmm. that we all are that spark of the divine, because that will bind us together. The way traditional religion thinks now, it brings on that idea, the sin of separateness. And the only way to heal the world is if we're all aware that we are spiritual beings.
And we'd like to end with this one phrase of HPB and ask you, respect it, seriously, for the month of March. Gratitude does more good to the man who feels it than to him for whom it is felt. Meeting is adjourned.